Today's episode of A Novel Podcast is sponsored by Audible, and today's novels, Spook and Packing for Mars by Mary Roach, are available through audible.com's audio library. A Novel Podcast listeners can get a free trial and a free download of any audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/anovelpodcast. You're listening to A Novel Podcast, in-depth discussions of literature from all genres and generations. I'm your host, Russell, and I'm joined today by my wife, Sarah, and our good friends, Jack and Sam. Today we're discussing two books by Mary Roach. Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife, from 2005, and Packing for Mars, The Curious Science of Life in the Void, from 2010. In these books, Mary Roach approaches the topics at hand in a humorous and educational manner, and isn't afraid to tackle the gory details. Fair warning to our audience, we will be discussing both of these books in detail and will make no attempt to avoid spoilers. If you haven't read these books yet and you want to go in fresh, we suggest turning this podcast off now. We'll begin today's discussion with Spook, and I'd like to get Jack's opinion of the book. Jack, did you enjoy it, and have you ever read anything like this before?
All right, so in full disclosure, I started reading this book in June of 2014. I did not finish it until July of 2015, and when I was talking to Sarah about this, I completely forgot that I had even finished the book, so that's how memorable this book is to me.
And you've read, Sarah, you've read a lot of Mary Roach before.
I've read a lot of Mary Roach before, so I also started Spook and stalled out half of the way through. Hmm. So the other things that I read by Mary Roach, I really liked. I counted her as one of my favorite nonfiction authors. But Spook was a little dry. I really liked Bonk, which I believe the subtitle is The Curious Coupling of Science and Sex, in which she reviews a lot of times that science tried to analyze sexual behavior in mostly humans. She might have talked about some animals during that.
Surely she brought up bonobos in that.
Probably. I don't even know what those are.
Oh, my. Well, that's a topic for another day, I think.
Oh. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, Spook was a little dry. I'm with you, Jack.
Now, I read this one in 2009-2010. It was a random pickup from the audiobook section of the library, and I read it on my way to Cleveland. Now, maybe it was because it was a captive audience. She had me for 6 hours. And maybe it was because I was pretty noob into audiobooks. But at the time, I remember liking it very much. So I was enjoying the thought of going back to it. However, upon a second review, I didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I did the first time through. Sam, how about you? What was your experience?
You know, I read Packing for Mars first.
Yes.
And, you know, I enjoyed Packing for Mars, and then I kind of had a high expectation for Spook. I'm going to have to go ahead and agree with y'all. It dragged and dragged a little bit for me, and the subject matter was particularly interesting because I like stuff like that. I like afterlife and...
Right?
My jam. I could read and listen to stuff about that all stinking day. As a matter of fact, sometimes I do, and... For Spook, it was enjoyable, like, it really was, but it did feel a little forced. It felt like she was kind of throwing in a bit of filler here and there, and doing more the humor aspect than the subject matter, for me. But, you know, overall, I'm not going to put it on the no list, but it's definitely one that I would say you might want to read a different Mary Roach book before you read Spook, because, you know, if you really want to get a feel for her writing.
I agree. I feel like this... showed off her writing. I mean, it was definitely her style, but it just didn't capture... I think her other books are juicier, far more interesting. And Spook had its high points. There were definitely some interesting topics mentioned and things discussed, but for the most part, just wasn't doing it for me.
She really takes the Michael Moore approach to documentary making, where she puts herself front and center in everything that she writes about.
Yeah.
And I did make a note here that she was talking about some medium named Dubois, and she's not actually talking about the medium. She's more going on and on and on about how beautiful and large the apple tart she's eating is.
Yeah. And more of her impressions of the medium and how beautiful the medium was, too. Mm. You know, we weren't really getting a whole lot of what the medium really does. She did have a few little zingers that she kind of threw out there that she said the medium made her think on later on, which, you know, she gave us a little food for thought later on, but I definitely agree with you there.
Yes, but her writing style, she definitely puts herself front and center. I mean, in Bonk, she agrees to go in, I believe, an EKG machine and have sex in the EKG machine with her husband. But, like, that is putting yourself front and center.
That really is. And him, too.
So, I mean, I kind of like that she took the class for, what was the class she went to? Was that with the medium? Where she went...
I think she was trying to get in touch with her mediumship, her whether she has any feel for psychic abilities or anything like that.
Yes. So she definitely, I mean, I appreciate the fact that while she's doing her research, she's willing to really put herself out there, literally in most cases. But I don't, this.
I also like very much from the beginning of this book that she says she's trying really hard to not have an agenda. But
yes.
That she's admitting that it is a very difficult thing to do.
I was going to say, do you feel like she succeeded in that? Because I feel like it was very biased. Not that I don't agree with her, but I didn't get the, you know, the scientific where, you know, you don't really make judgments.
Yes, I agree. She definitely put the disclaimer at the beginning of the book, but it was absolutely heavily tinged towards the skeptic, I think.
I feel like she was very honest about that bias, though. She wasn't trying to hide it or deceive in any way.
Right, but this was definitely approached with skeptical eyes.
I got that exact same impression from the other book, though.
From Packing for Mars?
Yes. Now, perhaps you see skepticism, whereas I'm simply seeing sarcasm.
Yeah, I think there's a heavy dose of sarcasm in her writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think Spook was particularly skeptical towards the subject matter.
It almost felt like she was trying to be convinced by these people that something was real. And, you know, like, that's how heavily her skepticism seemed to come across. As each person she was coming to and discussing with, it almost seemed like she was challenging them to try to get a little bit of proof out of them. I didn't really catch that approach with the other one that I read. And actually, I kind of wanted to start Stiff, because that one looked pretty interesting to me, too. You know, I guess with these other ones, she can't really put her skepticism out there quite as much. But I definitely felt like with Spook, she was trying to get more of like a confirmation. She was a little more challenging towards the subject matter and the experts that she was talking with about it, whereas she wasn't as challenging with the other one that I seemed to... That's not the approach that she seemed to take with the other subject matter.
I agree.
And it seems like a lot of the subjects that she investigated and wrote about with Spook were kind of, I mean, I hate to use the word crackpots, but that's kind of how they came off. Like, I didn't feel like she found any sort of real scientific investigation that people are doing in regards to the afterlife and exploring that. I felt like she has an opinion that there is nothing to the afterlife, and she found these crackpot cases to kind of back up her opinions on that.
Mm. I agree. There was a whole chapter on ectoplasm, which is pretty much not a real thing.
Yes.
Right? Like, guaranteed not a real thing. So why do an entire chapter on that?
Yeah. You could definitely tell she was cherry picking here and there, you know, who she was going to speak about the subject.
Now, I really, really, really liked, sort of as a counterpoint, Michael, she talked to Michael Persinger, and he was the guy that did the electromagnetic field studies in Canada. And he was saying that he was finding evidence for all of these hauntings in electromagnetic fields that were affecting the subjects. So people... were in the middle of an electromagnetic field, and he was saying, like, the stimulation in the right frontal lobe of the brain would cause people to hear things and see things and hallucinate a little bit. So I thought that was really, like, wow, this is a neat avenue to pursue. And then Mary sort of says, yeah, but it turns out he actually believes this, so...
So we're not going to talk with him about that.
Yeah, she almost, like, poo-pooed her own research, it felt like. Like, well, we were close.
Yeah. Like you said, that ectoplasma chapter, that's the one that really, for me, kind of felt like it dragged, only because, you know, we knew what that was. So, you know, that's the one that yes. felt like it kind of dragged. I felt like we could have maybe shortened that chapter and lengthened a little bit of a few other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I agree, because I think all of the ectoplasm research was from like the 1800s, right?
Oh, I believe yeah. so. I believe so.
It was well aged anyway. Yeah,
I mean, and some of it was funny. Like, I think a shorter chapter would have been relevant, but
yeah,
it was definitely a long chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like some research we've done in the past. Although, was that the chapter with the rabbit baby lady?
That was her.
Yeah.
Ooh, I just listened to a podcast about that story. I completely forgot that being in the book.
Yes. That's a strange story.
It's a weird story. Yeah, she definitely focused on quite a bit of the weird for this one. And I would have liked to see more of, like, the science aspect because, you know, after that, it seems like an interesting concept. We don't know. And it's cool to talk to the people who are looking into it and have the tools and the means to look into it.
Agreed.
Unfortunately, she kind of painted some of them in a light that kind of make them seem, you know, perfect word was crackpot. That's like, you know, they're a little kooky. They're a little off center. Yeah. And she really painted that light for them, even though their subject matter, I don't know, I still think it's kind of an interesting subject. Maybe approached with a little less skepticism and a little more information would have been a good one for this book.
A mind that was slightly more open.
But this one was fun. Like, it was a fun book. It was funny, and, you know, her wit and her humor definitely popped up. I loved some of the footnotes that she was throwing in there. For this particular book, the footnotes, in my opinion, were hilarious.
Yes.
You know, she had a few good ones in here that I really liked.
Her footnotes in Bonk they make the book, I think.
Do they?
Yes. Highly recommended. That's my favorite of hers. Some of the footnotes I can't talk about on a family-friendly podcast.
Okay, I'll have to definitely read more of Mary.
Now, to be devil's advocate about this, is it possible that we're skewing, or our perceptions are skewed by this, because all of her other books are a very hard science? Whereas this one is, I don't know the precise word for it, not a pseudoscience, but a fringe science, something that doesn't get a lot of funding.
I guess that could be true. It's not like you have government funding for studying the afterlife at this point in time, right?
I mean, she's going up against NASA and thousands of years of morgues.
yeah.
Yeah, they can't really fund a lot of this stuff because at the end of the day, we don't really know.
Right. All I can think about is the beginning of Ghostbusters. You are a poor, poor scientist, Dr. Venkman. And it's possible that she just doesn't have as much source material for this particular subject.
That's a good point. So this one I listened to on audiobook, and I did not care for the reader. What were your thoughts? I know you listened to audio also, Russ.
This one was fine. She wasn't great, but she wasn't horrible.
She kept doing repeated accents for people. Like yeah. The chapter where they were in India researching reincarnation, she kept doing this just ridiculous Indian accent for the guy. Kind of took me out of the element.
Well, audiobook narration with voices is extremely difficult to do, and you can't all be Jim Dale or Scott Brick. and I hate to tell you this, but one of the worst audiobook narrations I've ever heard was Gates McFadden.
Take it back.
No, it wasn't very good at all.
That's okay. I still love her.
Although the worst audiobook narration ever was Ray Bradbury reading Fahrenheit 451.
His own book. So along those lines, one of my first introduction to Mary Roach was that she was on Alton Brown's podcast. And it was one of the better podcasts that I've listened to. She's very dry. She has a very dry sense of humor, and she is sort of sarcastic, but mostly just dry. So hearing someone else read her words in a less dry manner, I feel like if you put too much into this sort of humor and give it too much emotion and too much Indian accenting, it really distracted from the nature of the book for me.
Distracts from the humor itself.
Yes.
Hmm.
I must be asleep because I just never listen to audiobooks. That's just not my thing. I never do it. I always read the book.
It never was my thing until we started doing the podcast and I needed to power through things.
Okay.
So sometimes I need free hands and but I have ears that are open.
You can read a book while you drive or walk or cook dinner.
You know, I will say I did audiobook Dune because of the complicated names. I was like, what is
Yes, and I liked that a lot.
That one I did like. I got a really good narration of it. I really enjoyed it. I just, you know, y'all, I hear y'all frequently talk about audiobooks, but that sounds like you said, you know, the way to get stuff done instead of, you know, reading your way through it. It's, you know,
it works for some.
Yeah, a good combination of the two. These might have been nice to hear versus read. Both of these might have been nice to hear versus read, but they were both very enjoyable reads.
I like reading her books because of the footnotes. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's a little prize at the end of the page.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely.
I think you probably lose a little something like that with an audiobook because you don't know what's a footnote and what is main text.
Yeah, you really have to focus.
Mm-hmm. And if the narrator did something, could have done something better, it would have been in some way changing her inflection when it comes down to footnotes. Perhaps reading those in an extremely dry manner.
Maybe Mary could have read her own footnotes.
That would have been interesting.
It would have.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Now, did you guys have a favorite haunt from the book or a favorite incident that she wrote about?
I didn't have anything in particular. You know, nothing really jumped out at me as a favorite for this particular book.
Understood.
I guess I enjoyed the whole entire subject, even though it was written in a skeptical way. I did enjoy the, you know, entire book. The photos that she has to illustrate each chapter are actually really good too. They go along very well. You don't know quite what's coming, but it's, you know, they're very interesting, and the names for the chapters are very interesting.
And a little teaser.
Yeah, they're funny little teasers that she throws out there. The one that I guess if I'm focusing on a favorite part, I really liked when they were talking about weighing the soul. Like where they, I
that think was my like, favorite as well.
Oh yeah,
where it's like 3 grams or something like that. I could be totally off. I don't remember exactly how much, but how that doctor was weighing the soul and weighing the dead people and going, you know, right there at that moment of crossing over. What is that 3 gram difference or whatever it was?
Yeah,
I thought that particular part was very, very interesting. You know, it's just, that was just one part to me that really stuck out. I really enjoyed. And coincidentally, I don't know what the word is for it. I'm sure there is a term for it. I saw something like that on a TV show later on after I had read about it here in this book. Same doctor popped up later in a TV show. And then I saw something else when I was looking at the library and I was like, that's that weighing soul guy again. So I don't know if just because I saw it a few times afterwards that became my favorite part. But that part to me in particular was really interesting and really memorable.
It's moments like that when the frequency illusion really seems like it's not an illusion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true.
I also noticed, though, that there was a part where they were weighing mice as they died.
As he killed them.
But they were killing them inside sealed containers and they were not seeing any weight loss. And I said, well, wouldn't necessarily the soul not be able to escape the container?
Oh.
Oh, I didn't, well, didn't think about it.
The scientists conclude that the mouse soul was too light. I remember some complicated transaction where, like, if a human soul was 3 grams and a mouse was 1/400th the size of a human, mm-hmm. then the mouse soul would only be basically an immeasurable amount.
It's immeasurably tiny.
Yes.
It could be.
But I mean, who's to say the soul has to fit the body? You never know.
That's true. Maybe it was like a little Despero mouse.
As possible.
Uh-huh.
Or a mouse on a motorcycle, and he had a huge soul.
You know, like, what soul, like, you remember Fievel, the mouse from the old movie? That's a big soul and a little bitty mouse.
That could be.
Stuart Little, soul gigantic?
Probably.
There you go. Stuart Little, soul lab rat, you know.
You were talking earlier about the guy with the electromagnetic fields and
Yes.
having that being allow people to hear things. And I've always, they tell the joke about the tooth filling picking up radio stations and whatnot, or possibly recordings on a, or voices from a recording device or something like that. And I've always had a theory about this ever since high school, and I had to start getting myself up with my radio. You ever like or no, that's not exactly what it is. It's when you wake up in the morning and you have a song in your head, and then you get in the car and the radio turns on and that's the song that's playing.
That's such a weird experience.
So my theory has always been that, well, your brain, those radio waves are passing right through your brain. Your brain is probably just recognizing the radio patterns, the radio waves, and that pattern of that song. I've heard, seen these, felt these patterns before. This must be playing,
Somewhere.
Blinded by the Light.
Yeah.
And then,
That's a good
so th
choice.
it, your brain starts subconsciously thinking about Blinded by the Light, and then you hop in your car and you turn your car on, and there it is. That's the one that's playing.
Huh. That's a good way to look at it.
Now, I
Could
can't think
be.
of any other way to explain it anyway.
You know, speaking of that particular, I saw something recently about that EVP, the electric voice phenomenon that she talked about. I had seen something recently, and I had brought it up to an old manager that I worked with, and you know, he told me he actually is a paranormal researcher.
Oh, really?
Yes, and it cracks me up because I worked at somewhere that's very conservative, and I mean, some would call it square. Like, it's super not what you would expect a part-time paranormal researcher is. You know, it's like banker's hours, and I'm a banker by day, paranormal researcher by night. Like, it's, you know what I mean? It's really weird. But he said he's heard it before. He's heard that EVP. He's never recorded any. But he's heard it before. Like, in talking about this book, I've talked about it with several people, and you know, people tell you all kinds of stuff that they hear through, you know, teeth fillings and like, you know, like what you said a minute ago with you know, radio waves. You never know. It could just be filtering through your brain, and that's what comes out on the radio because, you know, your brain had heard it somewhere. Whatever the case may be, you never know. It's you know, or you never know. You might even be creating that at some point in time. It's just weird how we can't really look into it. So I guess kind of going back to what you said a minute ago, Russ, you know, I guess the subject matter is kind of hard to investigate. Maybe that's a good, you know, good reason why she came across so skeptical, because you can't really prove this kind of stuff either way. They're excellent theories to think about. It's definite food for thought, but man, how tough is it to try and talk with experts on something, you know, like on something unprovable, you know, something like that.
My favorite haunt, and I was kind of sad that it was she did find, well, allegedly they found someone who explained it, was the guy who was writing a paper, and when he misspelled the name, it would autocorrect to things like murder and basement and buried. Like, I thought that was just the coolest premise, and like, what a neat haunting. If you misspell my name in the paper, I'm going to tell you that I'm obviously my head's bashed in the basement. And then they decided that it was just him using an excessive number of custom dictionaries. Like, womp womp. Almost.
I thoroughly enjoyed her description of a near-death experience being like going to the Paris airport and then saying that you've seen France.
Well, yeah, that one was pretty good. Or how she was going to try and replicate it because she, hey, maybe she might want to do drugs with this doctor. Like, what? That would be a good way to go ahead and do your own research and really insert yourself into the experience and try to give yourself a near-death experience with the drugs. And I was that one, to me, that was really memorable as
Give
well.
it a try. And she said she was in a class where they were talking about spirits, and she went to get a drink because that's the kind of spirit she can get in touch with. It's like, yeah, Mary, I hear you there. I like that.
Yeah, she really did have some good the really good stuff that she threw out there in these
She
little
has pretty
stories
good
that she did.
one-liners, I think. Pretty good zingers. Did you have any particularly memorable quotes or ideas from the book, Jack?
I don't. I do remember. So, I do remember the weighing of the soul. I really like that. And I, the other thing I really liked at first first was the reincarnation chapter. I think that was the very first chapter.
Yeah, it was early.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have, I don't know, I just thought it was kind of spooky of these little kids who are answering these detailed questions about someone who lives like 80 miles away, who died. And I just really liked how she had started setting that chapter up. But then I felt, and this is how I felt about the whole book, was that it eventually kind of led down the road of condescending seems a harsh word to use, because she's just, I mean, I think she's just humorous and she just doesn't believe.
But flippant, I think.
Yes, flippant. I like that word.
Yeah.
And then I think that just that whole sort of tenor of the book was just kind of set when that first, very first chapter. And I don't know if that kind of put me off the rest of the book.
That's a good point. It's funny you were mentioning talking to someone about reading the book and having, so I am a banker by day, and I was talking to a coworker, and out of the blue, she said, "Sarah, do you believe in reincarnation?" And that's a big question to answer in a banking environment.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, not really, but I'm not totally no, but no, I don't.
Yeah.
And she was telling the story about how, I'll leave it vague for privacy, her husband's daughter never really cared for her. And she's very, very sweet. It's absurd that someone wouldn't like her. And the daughter told her that she went to a hypnotist, and the hypnotist said that my coworker in a past life had killed the daughter when the daughter was an infant.
My gosh.
Yeah, right? That's kind of heavy for a hypnotist to drop, I think. And the daughter was like, well, that's why I don't like you.
Really?
And now my coworker is like, you know, kids never really liked me, and I wonder if that's why, because in a past life. And I was like, nope, I try not to poo-poo other people's beliefs, but I need you to stop thinking that and saying that, because you absolutely weren't a baby murderer, okay? Yeah. Okay.
That is a very interesting way to look at it. Now, I know this is just me, easy for me to say, because that's not me. But now I want to go to a hypnotist and be like, what do you know about me? And what can we find out about my past life? Here's what I heard.
That might be an interesting read.
Yeah.
I think there is a self-help book out there about past lives. Maybe we can do that on a future one.
We have to do a little research on that one.
You know what? I put that one on the list of things I'd to write down to read, because that sounds pretty interesting. Isn't it so interesting, the things that people tell you when you tell them what you're reading? You know, I found out about the whole paranormal researcher, and, you know, that I know. And then a friend of mine also told me that she had a, she's a definite skeptic. She's like, nope, don't believe it, don't buy it, no past lives, no spook, no this, no that, I don't buy it. Well, she tells me that but she does have an experience, because I guess everybody...
I think everybody does.
Yeah.
Or you have a story about someone close to you that did, or...
Yeah. And she told me that she said she didn't mind if I shared it, but it was just interesting to me. She says that her husband, she recently married him, but they have been together for 15 years or so. They've been together since they were about 15, and she's a little over 30. So they've been together for a very long time. And when they were in college together, she lost her... her husband lost his dear friend, passed away in a car accident. Sad story, you know, I was very, very sorry to hear that. And she tells me that her mother, who is a very strong believer in the afterlife and spooks and past lives and crystals and you name it, she probably believes in it, tells her very skeptical daughter that she had a dream about a friend, and that the friend told her to tell her husband by name. She said, Ryan, tell Ryan I'm sorry. And totally unrelated, she'd never met this person, the mother never met this person. She said, and he also said to tell his girlfriend that he loves her, and she named his girlfriend. And she'd never met these people before. And so my friend was like, that's really weird, because they always used to joke around back in the day and say, I'll find a way to haunt you. I'll find a way to say, you know, what I need to say to you. You better hope we don't have, they used to joke about it. So just to me hearing, you know, and I've told other people, oh yeah, I'm reading this book, Spook. And everybody has a little strange story, a little interest in the odd when, you know, they find out it can be approached from a scientific, you know, pair of eyes. It can be approached a little differently. Everybody seems to feel more comfortable to share when it comes up in the manner that Mary Roach approaches. you know, it may almost seem like she's writing off the people who know the best, but it really also kind of brings up just the fact that she brings these people up and, you know, says the University of Virginia has a research section about this or that. You know, it gives it some validation if there's a university and an author looking at it, right?
That's true.
Well, let's move on and let's talk a little bit more about Packing for Mars. So I'll start simply by saying that I think that Spacewalking Euphoria sounds awesome. What did you guys think of Packing for Mars?
I loved Packing for Mars. I thought it was hilarious. The way she approached this one was very interesting. The subject matter was interesting for me to begin with. You know, you want to do your spacewalk. I want to see freeze-dried urine across the window. Apparently, it's a sight to behold, being with the Earth behind it. This is where, to me, she really shined. I really enjoyed this book quite a bit.
I really liked Packing for Mars also. I think, again, it's subject matter that I'm interested in, and I like her approach. And I think removing that skeptical element, and while she treats the subject matter with respect, she also still has like funny footnotes, and she definitely dives into the nitty gritty. There's a lot of poop talk in this one.
It happens.
It does happen.
Yeah, two chapters.
It seems like that has been like mankind's greatest discoveries, is like, how do we poop in space?
How do we do this? Speaking of, have you listened to the poop podcast that Mary Roach does yet?
I did, Sarah? I did. So Jack and I were talking, our kids like podcasts now, we both have 3-year-olds, and mine, anytime I suggest a podcast, he wants to listen to one about poopy, because he's 3, and we found one, it's a kid podcast, and Mary Roach talks about poop. And they reference Packing for Mars, and they reference Gulp, in which she talks about the digestive system and definitely talks about some poop there. But I got a kick out of it because I was like, oh, hey, it's Mary Roach talking on a kid podcast about poop. And he liked it because we talked about poopy. So the whole family was happy.
3 or 33, it seems like even the scientists think it's an interesting subject.
That is true. Everybody does it.
That's the truth. I really enjoyed her approach to quite a bit of stuff. The art in this one, I don't know if y'all took a look at the photos that she did for, between the chapters for this one, too. She really knows how to pick them, or whoever her editor is, or however it works out. They really know how to pick them. The cover is hilarious. It's just got, you know, the whole Moon Man concept from, I don't know, is that the 60s is when?
Yeah, sort of the...
We were looking at space, yeah. So,
classic space race.
You know, the whole... Yeah, she managed to find a few pretty interesting photographs to illustrate what the chapter was going to be about. She even managed to get herself in here. She's got a picture of herself when she does the whole gravity parabolic flight chapter. She got a picture of herself around in there.
Her talking about learning how to be weightless reminded me a lot about the beginning of Ender's Game when they were just going into the battle room for the first time.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
I would definitely like to ride the Vomit Comet, but I've been saying that since I watched the making of Apollo 13.
No, thank you.
It's
not for everybody.
Why not? One of the things Mary Roach talked about in the podcast with Alton Brown, I think that's where this was referenced, but she said she was basically just a magazine journalist, and she started writing stories that would get her into positions where she wanted to be. So she started writing travel stories so that she could travel. And I believe that she referenced one of the reasons she wanted to write about the Vomit Comet is because she wanted to ride it, so this is a great way to get someone else to pay for her to take a ride.
Interesting.
I think that's smart. Yeah.
That's clever.
I like it.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how they found, I don't know if that's when they found him, it's just kind of bringing it up reminded me. They found the scientist with that, where he doesn't react for some reason, he doesn't get sick, he has that, some sort of disorder where his inner ear doesn't bother him, so it doesn't throw him off, and they weren't sure whether the chair was working or not.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was absolutely hilarious, because I don't think that that's a very common disorder to have, and, you know.
Right, he's really vomit-proof.
Be vomit-proof, and I just think it'd be really funny to find that scientist testing the chair, you know, and not realizing that it's probably not the chair, it's the human in it, and he's, you know, not very many of him floating around. It's just ironic that he got there, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did this happen?
Yeah, how exactly does that happen?
Yeah.
The universe doing that funny stuff again.
One of my favorite chapters was the chapter where she talked about the Japanese version of NASA with the people that were trying out to become Japanese astronauts. And, I mean, to my mind, the sort of ridiculous process that they went through, where they were all given, I think, letters, and then sort of pitted against each other in all of these really bizarre tests. Like, they had to make 1,000 origami cranes and build Lego robots and give like self-merit presentations, and they photographed their plates after they ate to see how much waste was left.
Mm-hmm.
That's intense.
To go back to the 1,000 paper cranes, do any of you watch Eureka when it was on? Because that was
yes,
but we haven't gotten through the last season yet.
Was that in the last season?
Oh, if you don't remember, it was probably in the last season.
Okay.
Oh, well, we'll get there eventually, but no, I haven't seen it yet. What happened?
Okay, so remember the 1,000 paper cranes.
Okay. Oh, okay. And we won't do
no
anything
spoilers
else
for Eureka then. Jack and I were touchy about spoilers when we're talking about books.
Yeah. I mean, we'll spoil these two that we're talking about, yes, but we should try and keep anything else spoiler free. Now, at the risk of being spoilery, which I don't think I'm going to spoil anything here, but okay, there was something about this book that really bothered me. It was about the cranes. So she mentions a creepy movie villain leaving origami behind. And I just wanted to know, have you never seen Blade Runner?
Oh.
I mean, come on. Sam, have you seen Blade Runner? Okay.
No, remember though, I haven't seen anything.
Yes,
remember,
right,
we talked about
you're
this
right
before. I haven't seen anything. You guys give me great suggestions so I can go and catch up on stuff that apparently I lived on a different planet when it was out. Like, I don't know.
Hmm.
Blade Runner is my exact age.
Like, you're dating yourself.
I know. Well, I'll just leave it at that. But like the same day and everything.
Oh, wow.
I think that's my fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
My exact
Sarah age. And Blade Runner are exactly the same age.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, okay, so if you see Blade Runner, creepy villain leaving origami behind.
And
yes,
if it's really dated, don't think of me.
Never.
Or do. It doesn't really matter at this point.
It's kind of timeless. It's just very dystopian.
I like dystopian. I mean, not for me personally, but to read about.
I have a book recommendation for you when we get to our round robin at the end.
Yay!
Don't let me forget. Don't let me forget.
I won't.
Oh, I have this note here. It says, when talking about a study regarding sleep deprivation and drugs used, Mary Roach says, it appealed to my sense of fun and asked to observe.
Yeah.
I just like those little snippets.
Yeah.
And what about the toilet?
There was a lot of toilet talk.
The one that she was going to use.
Oh.
Oh, I loved that.
She thought she was going to use it.
And the way that she describes it, they were inviting her to try it out. What do you do on a toilet? I can't. But if her description of what happened is correct and accurate.
Yes.
I can't blame her for thinking that they wanted her to actually utilize the toilet for what it was made for.
It sounded like they wanted her to become a little more comfortable.
It
right.
Sure did.
But I like that she was then horrified. Like, oh no, of course I wouldn't use the toilet.
Not going to do that.
Why would you ever think that's what I was going to do?
I would have liked to have witnessed that little backstroke firsthand, to have been a fly on the wall.
I think she does a good job of letting you picture it in your mind's eye, though. We've all been in a situation like that.
Definitely.
Maybe not with a toilet, but...
not that exact situation. NASA has never thought that I was going to use a non-functional toilet before, but...
Right.
I have had, you know...
Some sort of back pedal.
Pop up. Yes, definitely.
Now, you guys mentioned in Spook how you felt like she kind of... what was it you're phrasing? She went off on tangents, or she spent a lot of time talking about... side stories that didn't really have anything to do with Supernatural. What was it you guys said?
Well, just how she seemed very skeptical about that particular... how she would seem skeptical and kind of...
Oh, did we maybe say she was researching things that were more crackpot rather than focusing on...
No, I remember mentioning the tart. The tart, which of course has absolutely nothing to do with the Supernatural.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I came up with several... I felt like she did the exact same thing in this book, where she spends an inordinate amount of time talking about how chimpanzees are not necessarily well-behaved. She also spent an incredible amount of time talking about unit measurement conversions. A certain amount of cups or grams of... What was it she was measuring? Urine?
Probably. Chances are.
So why do you need to make all of those conversions for me? How is that helping?
I don't know. You think she's fluffing her books? Just hitting a word?
All I'm saying is that it's something that you guys had commented on about Spook. I saw the exact same thing in this one. Although maybe it was only me who made the comment. I might be projecting.
Maybe if it happened here, I was enjoying the subject matter so much that I didn't notice as much. Mm.
And my final complaint, you guys asked about narrations. In this one, the narrator mispronounced Arobi and Rodanth.
I couldn't handle that. You have to be able to pronounce certain things that a lot of people know how to pronounce. Otherwise, it makes me giggle a little bit.
I did find it funny, though, that she actually did mention Knights and Rodanth, a movie I've never seen, but a town I've driven through at least 50 times.
Where's Rodanth?
It's somewhere between Nag's Head and Hatteras.
Oh.
It's the spot on the Outer Banks where you can pretty much throw a stone from the Sound and hit the ocean.
Today I learned.
There you go. And it's also a Richard Gere movie. So what about the guys on bed rest? What did you think of that? Bed rest is the wrong term, but bed rest study.
I actually had to do the math of how much, because it was, 17,000 for 3 months?
Oh, yeah. What were they making?
So I did the math for, like, you know, if they were to do that for a full year, I'm like, I'm that gig. I have student loan debt. I wonder if I could leave my family for 3 months and just spend that time in bed and the quiet and sleep.
Catch up on all your movies and your reading.
Yeah.
Right.
That'd be good for me. That'd be good. That'd be like almost like doing my homework. I'd be able to catch up on everything that everybody thinks that I missed.
I consider doing that before I read this book.
Now, the one thing I was, like, how do these people even find, like, how do they, do you know what I mean? Like, what are you doing in your day-to-day life where you just, like, oh, I'm going to go hunt down some study where I get to sit in bed for 3 months and not move, and they're going to pay me a lot of money. Like, I just don't.
Like, was that on LinkedIn, or?
I just can't wrap my mind around how these people stumble across these type of studies.
Although I do remember there being a headline, like NASA's looking for people to lay in bed.
Yep.
It totally popped up in my Facebook feed. I am not kidding.
Really?
Yes, it popped up in my Facebook feed because I have several different things that I like to look at. There was I effing love science, and then two other. And, you know, if you like these things and Facebook likes all your business, you might like this thing. It's suggested for you or whatever. And different studies had popped up and sleep studies came up and I was clicking through because I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I just kind of started looking at it. And there's all kinds of studies. And one of them was it had to do with smoking while laying down. It had to do with all ingesting all different kinds of substances while laying down. It was just very interesting. I was like, wow. So I clicked on it, looked at it. I was like, oh my gosh, that's like the bed rest they were talking about in Packing for Mars. That this isn't for space, it's for science and drugs.
Right.
So, you know, didn't seem all that great.
And then you see these headlines, NASA is looking for XYZ. And then my next thought is like, okay, that's totally fake. Like, moving on. Like, there's no, like.
Right. Yeah. That's definitely something I would generally dismiss.
Yeah.
Well, I was most intrigued by the gentleman who was a runner and was trying to make up for his not running by mentally envisioning himself running.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as I understand, the studies I've read said there's actually a lot of merit to that. People who practice basketball for 10 minutes versus people who think about practicing basketball for 10 minutes versus people who don't practice at all. And two of the three groups show remarkable improvement compared to the first group, or the one who didn't practice at all.
Really?
Yes. But I would have to say to that guy is, okay, maybe you will be a better runner. Maybe your form will not degrade over 90 days in this bed. But I guarantee you, you're not going to be burning any additional calories just by thinking about running.
True.
I remember feeling a little uncomfortable with that because I was like, man, that dude really misses running if that's what he does. Like, he just straight up thinks about it. And kind of when she was talking about leaving and they made the joke, like, I'll be here.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, man, that seems like it sounds like fun at first. But when she went and talked to the sleep study people, maybe it's not as fun as it seemed like it would be, you know?
Yeah.
It definitely gave a different perspective.
Yeah, it'd be tough to do that for that long. But that reminded me a lot of the... You ever hear about that radio station that did that contest to give away a car, ride a roller coaster as long as you can, you win a car?
Yes.
And the last one on the roller coaster wins the car?
Oh my God.
And they thought, ah, these guys will go for a couple of days, and then 3 months later, there are still people riding this roller coaster. I might have my time frames wrong, but...
It was an absurd amount of time later.
It was a lot longer. And they had to stop the contest and say, okay, well, guess what? Everybody who's still on here wins something. I forget what it was.
Yeah, because there were like two or three people left, I think.
I thought there were more than that, but I can't recall. I can't recall all the details. It was just one of those, oh my goodness, I can't believe it.
I mean, were they allowed to use the restroom?
Yes, they got a certain number of breaks every day, something like 3 half-hour breaks every day.
Okay.
And they the car wasn't running 24/7.
They just had to sit in it, right?
They had to sleep in the car.
Yeah. Yeah, there were rules.
Okay, all right.
And it only went for 45 minutes an hour or something because...
I don't know what...
There were definitely stipulations. I remember reading a lot about this.
But it was
this.
Still one where you read it and you go, wow.
I have never heard this story in my life. Was it like a local radio station or did this make big news? This is crazy.
I want to say I read it on like Snopes or something like that.
Could be. I remember watching about it on TV. But it was one of those things, I think, where, you know, the contest was only local, but then national news may have picked it up and said a local contest has gone on a lot longer than they thought it was going to go on. And that just is the kind of thing where, okay, I can do anything for 2-3 days, maybe. I bet I could lie in bed for a week, no problem.
Okay, after 6 CNN headline, it was in 1998, after 60 days on a roller coaster, 3 people win a car in Georgia.
Wow.
I found another one, 5 split prize for 10 weeks on a San Diego roller coaster, and dated in 1998.
Yeah.
70 days on a roller coaster.
So people will do some really crazy stuff for cars and money, I think, is what we're... One of my takeaways from the sleep study, or the stationary, the bed participants, was how good Mary Roach is at capturing someone's personality by only describing them physically and giving you like 1 or 2 sentences of dialogue. And I felt like as soon as she did that, I could picture both of these people laying in bed.
Yeah.
The one that couldn't even sit up and how he sort of had some like harbored animosity towards the one that was still able to sit up.
Yes.
And the one that was able to sit up was just so excited about Jell-O. And I just really liked the interplay she had between the two people.
Now, the one who could sit up, is that the one who got kicked out because he sat up to poop, like, later on in the study?
He might, or was, this was, like, his second go-round or something? He got kicked out the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember something like that.
I tell you, the thing that killed me about that more than anything else was the diet. They weren't allowed to eat whatever they wanted. They had to eat very specific things.
You have to eat astronaut food.
And all of it.
And they had to eat all of it.
I think that was the thing that made me go, nope, ain't doing that.
Yeah, he said that they would bring back the little packet of maple syrup if you didn't eat it all.
Yeah.
You had to drink it. Yeah.
That's right. You had to chug your maple syrup.
Oh God, maple syrup's disgusting. Oh, I could not. There you go. Now I realize I couldn't do a study either.
Yeah, I think this was good because it's something that everybody pauses for a minute, like, well, I can do that. I could lay in bed for 3 months, but then when you really think about chugging maple syrup, you gotta think about this twice.
Okay, so any final thoughts on either Spook or Packing for Mars?
At one point in Packing for Mars, she called the chimps headed for space ill-fated gravity monkeys. And I think that would be a really good band name. And then my other Packing for Mars question, and I listened to this, which was a blessing and a curse, but at one point in time during the book, she mentioned, if you only read one astronaut's biography, it should be this guy's. And I don't know which guy it was.
Bud Schuster.
Was it Bud Schuster? No, that's The Highway. Get out of here.
I thought it was Jim Lovell.
Was it Jim Lovell?
I thought it was. I could be wrong, though. And the reason why I say that is because I remember wanting to write that down myself and read it because...
Is he the one that became the governor?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
No, it wasn't... No.
He was, and you know, that was pretty interesting too. The little tidbits of his that she included made me want to read more about him.
Yes, I think it was him, I think. But so are you ready? I would say Packing for Mars is a 4 and Spook was like a 2.5 for me.
I'm gonna say the same.
Yeah, cool. I definitely would agree with that.
I give them both 3s.
Well, that's boring.
Yep, I am boring. although I have to throw in that for me, Packing for Mars, the most interesting thing was learning that wild dogs get their vegetables by eating the stomach contents of recently killed prey.
That was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I also liked reading about, I think it was towards the end, when I just kind of got excited once she mentioned Whataburger, which is a local Texas thing.
Ah, yes.
Got excited. So excited. Ridiculously excited. I don't know why. It's just like, oh, look.
She knows that.
Yay, I know that. And she knows that too. But that chapter was really interesting when she was talking about how they managed to put together all different kinds of space food and space cubes. Mm-hmm. And like, these things were really cool to sell to the public. But astronauts were like, yeah, we are not eating space cubes.
Yeah, that's gross.
We didn't like that. That's disgusting.
Well, one of my favorite things in the world is freeze-dried peaches.
I'd never.
Which I don't know if astronauts actually eat that or not, but they do sell it at the Air and Space Museum.
So I can only assume that they do.
Yeah.
Oh, I did write down a couple favorite quotes. He has a minor in explosives and the slightly bitter, misanthropic personality of someone who shouldn't. I feel like that quote really pulls up an image. Like, I can see that guy in my head right now.
Well, I wrote down, just kind of talking about what I was a minute ago, the whole sandwich, the whole little cubes, the sandwich cube thing that she was talking about. But what made me laugh is the recipe. It was something like chill fat toast pieces until they're congealed. And like, no, why would you give this to the astronauts? Like, I wouldn't give that to my dog. Like, that my dog would not want fat, congealed, chilled toast. Like, it would...
Right.
So it's just kind of funny that everything that they tried out to get the astronauts into space was hilarious, from the suction toilet to the whole space cubes, you know? It's just really funny what we're doing to get people into space, and seeing her take on it was really, really interesting.
Mm. I think so, too. And the difference Indeed. Between, like, early space research and when they kind of realized that astronauts were humans and maybe we should feed them food instead of alfalfa cubes or congealed toast cubes.
Mm. Congealed toast lard cubes.
Yes. Super gross.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Spook and Packing for Mars. Let's go ahead and go around the room and give everyone one final thought. Tell me what you've been reading lately, what else you've been doing, anything else you want to add, and any other final thoughts. Let's go ahead and start with Sam.
I've gone back to the, we were talking about a little bit a minute ago, the Flowers in the Attic book, just giving myself a little refresher. And that just kind of led me down the rabbit hole to reading all of other V.C. Andrews books that she's got out there. So that's what I've fallen into. That's the rabbit hole that I chased down. So, and being that there's so many of them, I could keep busy for that for a couple of months and kind of enjoy it.
V.C. Andrews will keep you busy.
Been doing a little bit more traveling lately. Been trying to get down to the coast and get a few pictures. That's been like my thing for the whole entire summer, is just enjoying. I'm in Texas, so I'm near the Third Coast. That's what they call it down there. So I go down to like Corpus Christi and Port Aransas and get all these gorgeous beach pictures. And that's just kind of been my thing. Been doing a little camping. Where I could, and trying to get like beach sunset pictures.
Cool.
Which kind of goes in handy because I'm reading trashy books. So it's like, hey, why not read trashy books on the beach?
Why not read trashy books in beautiful locations?
That was the theme for the summer. That's what I've been doing. I did take my good books down there and was reading, you know, what we were just discussing, reading my Mary Roach down there. But that's not as fun to soak up the sun. I was busy trying to rot my brain. You know, Flowers in the Attic Coast.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, photography and reading. It's been a good summer. I can't complain. Fall is my favorite season, so I can't wait to see what's coming up here.
All right, and how about yourself, Sarah?
I have a lot of pending books right now. So I had Spook and Packing for Mars going on, and then I'm trying to read The Serpent of Venice by Christopher Moore, and I've heard that maybe that one was a little... I should have read a different one first. It's very funny, but I think I just don't have the time to dedicate to it right now. And then what I'm reading and really liking is, we recently did the podcast for The Devil in the White City, and I started to read In the Garden of Beasts, the one that Larson writes about an American family in Hitler's Berlin, and that is very interesting. I've read a ton of World War II books about the Holocaust, and this is the first one that I've personally read that approaches it from more of a political point of view rather than what's happening with the Jewish people. So I don't find myself reading a lot of nonfiction about history, and I should read more, but I'm really enjoying that. And then a bunch of little fluff books on the side. And I have to tackle Flowers in the Attic soon.
Mm. And Jack, how about yourself?
Yeah, I've got a couple books I need to finish up. The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon.
Ooh, is that good?
I am liking it so far.
Okay.
Did you read either of the other two from the Lost in the Woods episode we did recently? Ritual or The Ruins?
The Ruins was on my to read list, but I I read awful reviews on it, and I
ignore The Ruins. The Ritual's good though.
The Ritual's good. Okay. So I need to finish that. I am, and Russ, you would know, I'm kind of like getting to the end of her first night, so nothing really spooky's happened.
Sure.
But it's just really interesting to me just how quickly, you know, especially with having kids, how quickly things can happen and can get out of hand, and how she's just miles and miles from anywhere they're probably even looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
So that, as a parent, is scary. And then the other book that I am about halfway through, and it's kind of similar theme, Into the Wild, which is a nonfiction, of the guy who went up to Alaska, and died up there. So I'm reading that.
That wasn't the bear one, was it?
No. They made a movie of it. I think that awful monotone girl, was she in that one? Twilight Girl?
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
She
like lived in the desert and she was so pale. She glowed in the dark. It was very realistic.
Totally realistic.
Hmm.
I think she was in the movie. I can't think of her name, but you know who I mean. Twilight Girl.
I do.
Hmm.
No, he sells all of his possessions, hitchhikes up to Alaska, lives in this bus that he found in the middle of the Alaskan bush, and he, you know, thinks that he's knowledgeable enough to do this, and he ends up eating the wrong kind of berries, and then dies. So it's just a story about him and his, and that he'd left a diary or a journal or something, and that's what's used for the book. And I have a couple cozy mysteries that I am going to start. As a side note, I've been fishing the past 4 days.
Oh, yes, I saw your picture.
Did you see my picture?
With your little, like, 2-inch fish? I mean, giant fish.
Not even, probably.
A fish is a fish. I never catch anything.
But I brought my Nook on the boat with me, and someone had dropped a fish in the boat, and it was flapping around on my book for, like, I don't know, 10-15 minutes. And my, like, I'm sitting here right now nauseated because I can smell the fish smell.
Oh. That's really, I'm sad for you.
I don't know how. Because then it's electronic. I can't just, like, throw it in the washer.
Yeah.
Well, I have, of course, been trying to get back to the Flowers in the Attic. But in the meantime, I've actually been reading by Dan Simmons, The Abominable. And you're talking about a good summer read. Nothing like reading about the freezing heights of Mount Everest while you're sitting on the beach.
Yes, that sounds it. You said you had a dystopian book for me too, right?
Yes, Richard Morgan's Market Forces. And I can't say I thoroughly enjoyed it, but if you like dystopian, it's definitely worth reading. Interesting thing about it is it kind of takes the whole concept of Brave New World or 1984 and throws it on its head.
Okay.
In this story, we don't have an overpowerful government. Rather, we have a government that has absolutely no power to control the corporations. It's also one of the few books that really messed with my dreams, so I couldn't, I don't know how to describe it. It was just intriguing. I couldn't listen to it while I was falling asleep. And then lastly, I've met a few people who have been reading 1Q84, and we're considering doing an episode on that one in the coming months.
Never heard of that one about.
I don't know. I'm going in fresh.
Nice. Okay.
But Julie, who we've podcasted with, was reading that, and she was saying it's, like, life-altering. She loves it.
What's it called?
And then
1Q84.
It's, like, the number one, and then Q84.
Oh, okay.
But it looked like it was 800 pages long.
Yeah, it did. But then again, The Abominable was 650 pages long.
That was another doorstopper.
Mm-hmm. Dan Simmons doesn't write short stories.
Well,
which I did also read Drood by Dan Simmons.
I don't think I've read that one. 1Q84. Hey, this does look pretty interesting.
So up next, we have Flowers in the Attic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have anything on deck after that?
We don't. We need something. Thoughts? Ideas? Suggestions?
Oh, doggone it. I had written one down. Where's my notebook? Where's my page in my notebook? I had written one down. I had a good one for you. Now I can't remember what it was. Let's see. Maybe I'll send you a message when I find it in my notes.
Yeah.
Shoot a message.
Let me know. We're always open to anything you want to discuss. I'm willing to read.
No. Well, I was going to say we need another, like, fluffy one, but Flowers in the Attic is pretty. Maybe fluffy isn't the word, but.
It's not brain food or anything. You can learn anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely a good gripper.
Take a lot of focus, a lot of brain power on that one.
What if we did a collection of short stories like After Dark or?
I remember that you just reminded me. The Arabian Nights might be a good one to discuss because it's such a prolific book. I mean, that's what I was going to suggest to you. You just jogged my memory when you said short stories. That's the one that I was going to suggest that, at some point might want to tackle or consider. I think that'd be a good one.
That might be a good one. I've been itching to do a classic novel. Like Jane Eyre, Wuthering Heights, something to that effect.
Maybe we can tackle Finnegan's Wake. Then again, maybe not.
Maybe.
All right. Any final comments before I close us out?
I don't think I have any. It's always been fun. Been, you know.
Great.
Been a pleasure talking with you guys, as always.
Terrific. Absolutely.
All right. Well, then, thank you guys very much for joining us. We look forward to you next time.
Bye.
Good night.
A Novel Podcast is looking to produce more episodes, and we want you to join us. If you like reading novels and then talking about them, then you're a perfect candidate. We record remotely, so your location on Earth isn't a consideration, and no prior experience is necessary. Send us an email or a tweet and let us know what books you'd like to discuss. A Novel Podcast at gmail.com or at A Novel Podcast. Look forward to hearing from you.